Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Thursday morning, April the 16th, 2026, 4:16:26, 15 minutes past the hour, and we've got a guest with us live in the studio this morning. I am so happy to have with us. We were talking before we went on the air. I cannot believe it's almost been a decade since he's been in the studio with us. We have to have him on more than once every decade. He is a popular figure in the history of Marion. Almost 30 years in the Court of Common Pleas as judge. I don't believe ever lost an election in that time. He is Judge William Finnegan. Judge Finnegan, it is so good to see you and have you back in the studio this morning.
Thanks. Real good to see you, Scott.
Yeah. Judge, what have you been up to? What's new?
Well, I'm retired. retired a little over 7 years ago. Little bit different approach from working full time, and I decided to retire. Then I could have run again in 2018 if I wanted to, but at the time I retired, it was 30 years full time. First 16 years was actually at municipal court, Marion Municipal Court, doing the misdemeanors and traffic cases and evictions and small claims, those type cases. Then I was elected to Common Pleas Court at the courthouse, and had the last 14 years was doing felonies and malpractice cases and personal injury cases, and those type cases as far as that goes. And so I could have run again, but like I say, I already had 30 years in. Fortunately, I started out as one of the youngest judges in the entire state of Ohio. I became a judge the first time when I was 34 years old, which is pretty young. I was the third youngest judge in the state when I took office. And so after 30 years, I figured, why not? Maybe I could have some time to play and have some fun. And that's what I've done.
You know, it's very interesting because the judges since you seem to come and go with elections. Why do you think that is? You maintained for nearly 30 years.
It was a different situation here in Marion for decades. I'm saying like from the 1940s. Generally speaking, once you get past that first election, usually you'll be challenged, you know, the first time you're up. Well, that happened to me. But after that, traditionally, if you didn't do any major mess-ups or anything, you can have a career at it, which is what happened to me. I mean, I had no major mess-ups as far as it is. That changed in 2012 is where it changed. A couple things at Common Pleas Court, both the Common Pleas judges run the same year, sort of unusual. In the one position, Judge Davidson was in office, but he got a lot of bad press related to the Kling Trust, which was a big funder for various agencies, and there were problems financially. And he got a lot of bad press from that. So Jim Slagle, who had been county prosecutor, decided to run against him. So that sort of broke the mold. The same year I was running for re-election, nobody was after me, but because Slagle ran against Davidson, Slagle was a Democrat, Davidson was a Republican, the Republicans ran somebody against me at the last second, and that was Warren Tom Edwards. And I won pretty handily against Mr. Edwards. But that was the first break on it. And so then you have 6 years later. I retired, so that made for an open race. And then when Judge Slagle was running for re-election, Tom Edwards ran against him. and defeated Jim Slagle. So that did that. And then 6 years after that, it's 2024, and somebody ran against Judge Edwards and defeated Judge Edwards. That was Todd Anderson, who's now judge there. So that's sort of changed. I think things will settle down now. I think both Judge Anderson and Judge Frericks are both really solid, and I think they're both going to have good careers.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned they're a Democrat of the Democratic Party. You are a member of. In Marion, the Democratic Party has had some troubles over, to say the least, they've had some troubles over the last decade. I think now they've lost every position in Marion County and city, except one city council seat and Joanne Kosotis as the Marion County Auditor. You were as popular, I don't know if we call it a politician, but you were as popular a judge, somebody running for office, as there could be. What happened to the Democratic Party in Marion, Ohio?
Donald Trump. Mm. Pure and simple.
That's what happened.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I ran for office, and I ran for six times, three of them I was unopposed, three of them I was opposed, and I had a very consistent pattern as far as the election goes. I majored in political science in college, so I knew how to do campaigns, so that's a big plus. If you have an office you have to run for. So I sort of knew what to do. The power and the base of the Democratic Party in Marion County traditionally, like nationally and statewide, was in the working class, working class areas, where we are very strong, and that's where the Democrats were very strong for decades. I always took pride in the fact that in all three of those elections, it was a consistent pattern. I was strongest in the north and the west sides of Marion. The working class and lower income areas and stuff, I always did very well. And the weakest areas, I was at, I would be the wealthiest areas, oddly enough. And although I won some of those pretty well at the end too, but that was it. I mean, that was the base of the Democratic Party. Donald Trump comes along in 2016. He does his populist message. And, you know, you take a look at it. A lot of people, working class people, felt they've been ignored for the last 30 years. And it was fairly accurate. I mean, Obama came through with Obamacare. I think that was a big plus for working class people. But other than that, Not a heck of a lot, and they were falling behind the people because some of the Democrats started going with the big money people as well and stuff, trying to reach across, and that I think that's what happened is Trump had the pull for the working class people, and that's what happened here in Marion, which is why, you talk about 2012, which was 14 years ago. There were 13 countywide offices in Marion County, and eight of them were held by Republicans. Five of them were held by Democrats. It's a very balanced county at that time, but since 2016, it hasn't. And you can see that. You know, it's just, I mean, statewide, it did the same thing. I think it's changing this year. It may be different finally, because of the bad things economically that are happening and stuff that's really hammering the working class people under Trump. And, you know, I think it could be a somewhat rough November for the Republicans, although they're still favorites, you would have to think, both here in Marion County and statewide. But I think that's finally changing.
And I think that's the question, what's going to happen in November for a lot of people, because it possibly could change. Everybody's looking at this governor's race. You've got likely going to be Vivek Ramaswamy, although he does have a primary challenger in Casey Putch, and you have Amy Acton, for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Now, we've never had a female elected governor. We've never had a non-white person elected governor. You're going to get one or the other this time, it would look like. Neither one really has any political experience as far as being elected to a political office. What do you make of this gubernatorial race?
Fascinating. Yeah, and you've cut the different currents. From the polling, I think Amy Acton's done pretty well, which is sort of surprising. Well, considering, you know, the record since 2016 for Democrats has been very poor statewide. That could be for any number of reasons, the national situation and such. A lot of it may reflect about people's perception of Donald Trump. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. There could be religious things involved because Vivek Ramaswamy is not a Christian. And part of it, well, I don't think sex is so much of a big deal of it because there've been, obviously we've had Marianne Ellen Withrow and other fine people serve in statewide office as an Ohioan. Yeah, it's going to be just fascinating to see. Sherrod Brown's running. I think that's a big, strong thing for the Democrats running. I think he has a real shot at it because his traditional strength was the working class. And if people are starting to leave Trump, Sherrod Brown could do quite well, I would think.
If the election were held today, who would win, Amy Acton or Vivek Ramaswamy?
I don't know. I can't really get into that. We haven't really gotten into it, but I'm working part-time as a judge, which means I'm still under the Code of Judicial Conduct, which means I can't really talk that deep into the political things, although I have done a little bit here, but that's mostly the past and stuff. So that's all I can say.
I understand. How is it different being a visiting judge from a judge who is on the bench every day?
Well, I have a lot more time to have fun and play. Mm. I'll say that. It's really quite nice, I think. When you retire, if you want to, you can apply to the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, that's Sharon Kennedy, to be a visiting judge. And she found I was appropriate, and she appointed me. And then they'll call you up and say, well, first of all, they ask you what sort of cases you want to do or what sort of courts you want to do. I could do municipal court and common pleas, both, because I held both positions, and I had never been defeated for it, so that made me eligible. So I was happy to do municipal or common pleas. I enjoy both. It's different type thing, but in some ways it's the same, obviously. But I enjoyed both of them, geographically. I have a house here in Marion, I said 75 miles within Marion from Marion, and in 2020 my wife and I bought a house in Port Clinton. I said within 75 miles of Port Clinton. So that's where I get my appointments by and large, sometimes outside of it. But I have a couple cases over in Canton, Ohio right now. But and you can turn them down if you don't want to. Or,
do what you want.
Right.
Would you ever run for office again?
No, I wouldn't do that. A couple reasons. One is I'm financially pretty well set. Secondly, I'm in my 70s, you don't want to overstay your welcome.
You were so popular as a judge. I remember being at the popcorn parade, and maybe next to the mayor, you were probably the most recognizable politician in Marion at that time, or the most person, or the most recognizable person elected to political office. What do you? Everybody knew who you were. What was that?
If you really want to know, the biggest thing was as municipal judge, I did the cattle calls on Tuesday. Cattle calls, I mean, all the traffic tickets, initial hearings, and criminal arraignments and such. And the Marion Municipal Court was always one of the five busiest one-judge courts in the entire state of Ohio. Our caseload yearly was almost double the average caseload. And I was doing all, I did the arraignments. Most of the municipal judges will have magistrates do that. I thought that was a big mistake. Well, it depends what sort of judge you are, I guess. So what would happen is, you know, you may have 20, 30 people in as many. Biggest day was after the 4th of July one year, we had 130 people we arraigned. And those people are sitting in there, but, you know, a couple dozen of them. And they're not only hearing their case, they're hearing all the other cases that are going on. And they can see what I was doing in all the other cases. And I used to teach new judge school. And my course level, what I would try to teach them, was titled Building Your Judicial Philosophy and Reputation. And I told the municipal judges, I said, man, if you want to take that, well, if you do well when you're in the courtroom, do it. If you're bad in the courtroom, don't do it, because they'll see if you're really messing up and stuff. I think what it was they just saw me in all the other cases. I seemed to be pretty even-handed, I think, and not too crazy, I guess. And I think that was a big thing. When I was running contested elections the last two times, I got a first-rate political consultant who did polling, scientific polling, the best there was. And one of the questions they start, and this is in June, 5 months ahead, they said, do you know this candidate? Do you know that candidate? You know William Finnegan. The first time happened the 2004 election. The guy, I went, walked in to discuss it, and the guy said, state senators and mayors would kill to have your numbers and stuff, because the question was, do you know William Finnegan? Random people called. 67% of the people answered, said yes, they know who William Finnegan is, which is pretty rare for local office. And I think it was from that. That's the biggest thing. Of course, I did other things like, you know, what I do at church and softball and my ham radio stuff and things like that. I mean, I know people from that. I used to be out a lot.
Well, it was just always interesting to me because after you left, since you've left, we look at all these offices and judges in town, and not that some of them are not known, some of them are, but I don't think any like that. So maybe it was all those things in combination.
I talked to a friend of mine after one of the elections that I won. He said, I'm surprised. He said, there are two people in Marion County who don't have to worry about when they run for office. One is Andy Appelfeller, and the other one is you. I thought it was funny as anything. So.
And Andy's still there.
Yeah,
and
he is.
And Andy's still there.
Yes. Yeah, honest to God, that guy told me that.
Well,
like, wow, all right, I'll take that.
Well, it seemed to be the case if you look at election results. One thing I want to talk to you about, because I do remember the last time we had you in, it was as you were retiring, or right after you retired, I think, and a lot of people were concerned because you'd lost a lot of weight, and you had gone through a health issue. I think we talked about it at that time. You'd went through a bout with cancer, I believe.
I did.
How are things?
Well, things... things were going great till about 4 months ago.
Oh.
And I had a sepsis in my knee. And it's like, what's that? You know, one day it was on December 6th. I started to feel some pain in my knee. And within 48 hours, it had gotten real extreme and stuff. And my leg swelled. My entire right leg swelled. It was bad. And, you know, eventually I ended up having to go to the hospital. And I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. And then I had 2 weeks additional of rehabilitation to try and get my leg back. And I knew nothing about this. I never heard of it. I thought, and I didn't know when to go in. I grew up poor, so you don't go into the emergency room unless you're dying. Well, I almost was. It turns out, I looked it up on the internet, and this sepsis thing, it's fatal 10% of the time. You know, it's like, I had no idea that it was that bad. And, but they got me in and stuff, but my quad muscles, your upper leg muscles and stuff, I lost 98% of the strength there. Mm. I could move my foot, but I could not lift my leg. And so I've been slowly building myself up. Started first week of March, I was able to go back to the Y and start building on that. And the first day on this one leg extension machine, it's called, where your legs, they hang down and you try and lift this weighted bar up. Yeah. With the one leg. So I tried it with the one leg I exercise 3 times a week usually, and I could do 55 pounds with one leg. I took it down to 10 that first day. I tried to move the bar, it wouldn't even budge. Mm. At 10 pounds, it was that weak. But I stayed with it and stuff, and as my last time I went in, which was 3 days ago, I've been able to do 30 lifts at 30 pounds, which puts me at about 50% of what it was before I got hurt.
So back on track.
Yep.
That's good.
About getting there.
Getting there.
And then found out I got diagnosed with cancer again. So that's just my luck. Just as we're pulling out of that thing, I'm going into this one. And so they're going to start doing treatment on me here in 3 weeks.
Mm. Outlook good?
The odds are running anywhere from roughly 50% to 70%, which wasn't quite as good as what I had before. Before it was 70 to 80%. But, you know, fighting chance, trying my best and trying to build myself up. I lost 32 pounds from that knee thing, and I was down to my weight I last saw when I was in ninth grade. And I wasn't 6'4" when I was in ninth grade. I was skin and bones then. So building myself up, I'm halfway back to where I was before. Just going to be as strong as I can and tackle it as best I can.
So many people get that diagnosis of cancer now. When you get that diagnosis the second time around, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think I'm better prepared this time because... that treatment I had the first time was tough. The cancer I had was fairly advanced, and they hammered me hard. And 38 radiation sessions, which is a lot. And I lost 60 pounds. Yeah, see, I was at 248 pounds in 2013. Life was good as a judge, let's put it that way. I was too heavy. But I needed that, and I lost 60 pounds in the treatment. So I now weighed in at 176. I can't lose 60 pounds starting out at 176. So I'm going to do better, although the doctors say the treatment's going to be easier this time than it was before. They said the head and neck chemo and radiation is the toughest, which is what I had. It was neck cancer at that time. This isn't. So I have that fighting for me, too. But during that treatment, at one point, it was so bad, I thought I was going to die from the treatment. And I sort of had my talk with Jesus, so to speak. And once you've had that, you know, death doesn't scare you nearly as much. And it hasn't scared me as much ever since then. And it doesn't scare me now, as far as that goes. I'm ready to go if that's how it is.
Now, a lot of people are not there. What kind of conversation did you have?
Well, sort of paraphrasing what Jesus said during Holy Thursday is, you know, Lord, I prefer not to go through this and die, but if you want me to, I'm ready to go. Your will be done, as far as that goes. That's the approach I had on it.
But you're going in mm-hmm. and confident that you can get through this.
I'm going to do the best I can. I don't know if I'll be successful or not. Even if everything goes right, there's a chance that it doesn't get the cancer entirely, in which case it will kill me eventually. Mm. But I'm going to do the best I can. I've enjoyed my retirement. I've had a lot of fun. I've had good health because after that 2013 treatment, I was so weak, I couldn't believe it. I was trying to get the kickstand down on my motorcycle, double kickstand down. I put all my weight on it, pulled that. I could not pull it down. I was that weak. I said, this is never going to happen. So the week after they pulled out my stomach tube, I got a membership at the YMCA here. It's a great facility for a town this size, and they have a lot of stuff. And I've been going there steady ever since, lifting weights and you know, walking and stuff. And it's done wonders for me. Other than this stuff I've been telling you, I've been in pretty great shape.
You know, a lot of people say when it comes to battling something like cancer, attitude plays a big part. How do you approach that? As you say, you felt you were going to die at one point because of the treatment you were going through. How do you get through it? How do you keep a good attitude?
Well, you just survive as best you can. And it was rough, and I know I was not the easiest patient because I was basically bedridden for 2.5 months. And, you know, but, you just try and do the best you can. I looked at, okay, I'm this far along. I have this much down. I have this much to go. I said, let's just get to the end of it. And we go from there.
Yeah. Well, we certainly all hope that this turns out the same way, that everything goes well. Want to talk about the law, Judge. In mm-hmm. What case sticks out in your mind over the years? Is there a case that you think about more than others?
Well, there's think about them in different ways. I had that one. I inherited that one murder case from 1993, which was on the other side. But when Judge Slagle got elected, he was the prosecutor in the case, so it got kicked over to me. And it was still running through the courts, even though it had been 23 years, because of various reasons. And then at one point, I held the death penalty unconstitutional. Because of a U.S. Supreme Court decision that came down 2016, which knocked out Florida's death penalty statute, which was pretty similar to Ohio's. And I said, man, this seems pretty similar. I won't go into the details on it as far as that goes, unless you want to do that. But I said, this is pretty similar, where Ohio's system was part of only one of six states with death penalty where it's not the jury that decides whether the person dies. It's the judge who decides, and the jury just makes a recommendation. Florida had that, and the Supreme Court said, no, a jury recommendation isn't enough. So I said, well, and I wasn't alone. Every single one of those six states, there were courts who said the same thing, but when it got back up to the U.S. Supreme Court, they haven't touched the issue since then, which is not unusual. Once the U.S. Supreme Court makes a decision, before they do more stuff in relation to it, they want to see what develops. So,
do you think the death penalty is a good thing? Governor DeWine seemingly doesn't seem to be for it at this particular point. Past governors have said they regretted certain things in regard to the death penalty. How do you feel about it?
Personally, I don't like it. I'm basically a pro-life person. I mean, a pro-life person, you know, even if bad people are involved, you know. And so, no, I'm not real big on it. But, and that was the biggest question I fought with when I decided to try and go to common pleas judge, was what can I do on the death penalty? Can I impose the death penalty? And the answer I came to at that time, and it would have been true in that case, is that if it was there, if it was truly a case of the worst of the worst of the aggravated murders, I could do it. And so that's the reason I ran, was because I decided I did. It would have to be an extreme case, but yeah, I would do it if that case was there.
You know, and I think that's an interesting question a lot of people have with judges, is how much does you're a human being, how much does the judge's personal feelings on things filter in to his decisions or behaviors during a case or a trial?
Well, every judge, every person has their own experiences, and that forms your thoughts at a time. But one thing I make clear is that when that robe comes on, you follow the law, whether you agree with the law or whether you don't. And it's not like you try and slip around it and stuff. I mean, if the law says what it is, you follow it regardless. There's a lot of laws I don't personally agree with, the policy that's behind it, but if that's what it is, unless it's unconstitutional, I don't. And like that case, it was an issue of constitutionality there, that legitimate thing, and I called it the way I saw it.
Why did you get involved in the law? What was it about it that was appealing to you?
I wish you wouldn't have asked that. What it goes down to was, I was working at Tecumseh Products Company. I was in the machine shop, the AJ and the AK line. And it's hot in the factory. It's July. There's no air circulating and stuff. And it was just miserable. And I thought to myself, lawyers work in air conditioning. I said, I think I'm going to be a lawyer. And so that's what I did.
That's how it happened.
I thought I could do okay at law. I enjoyed reading. I think I had a pretty decent mind for logic and stuff like that. And that was it. I wanted to have a job where I could support my family. And that was the biggest thing.
Now doctors work in air condition too. Why not a doctor?
Because I don't like playing with blood.
Well, there you go.
That was it. I mean, I consider it as, I don't like hanging around sick people.
You don't want to do that. You know, it's fascinating. Lawyers and the law are such an interesting subject for people who are not involved in that. Because a client, do you have to believe your client? If you don't believe your client, do you still have to go in and say, this is the best defense I can give you?
If you truly believe that there's nothing to support what the person's saying and you think he or she is lying, no, you can't falsely represent to the court. A lot of times it's open as far as it goes. It's possible and stuff. And you know, I always told him, I say, you better tell me what the truth is here, because what you tell me, I'm going to assume it's true as far as it is, and I'll present it. And if it blows up in court, I'm not going to feel bad about it.
When you were practicing, what's the case that you remember the best from that era?
Oh, from when I was practicing?
Yeah.
Well, I had a couple jury trials, won both of those. I never lost a criminal jury trial. like Perry Mason.
That's a good record. Really cool. That's a good record.
Two for two. So that was nice. As far as I did a lot of consumer law, I was sort of unusual, and nobody's done it since then, and nobody did at the time I was there. So the attorneys would send me there, and you know, so I was suing different companies and stuff on behalf of consumers and stuff. I was pretty good at it. I was pretty successful at it. I enjoyed doing it. A couple of my cases made it into the case reports. So that was sort of nice. But other than that, nothing particularly exciting when I was practicing law. I was a small town lawyer, normal cases.
What do you have to like your client?
No, you don't.
No.
It's nice if you do. It's nicer if you do. But no.
You know, here in Marion, and I don't know how much you can or can't talk about this, we had the big kerfluffle a few years ago with Judge Warner.
Yes.
Which led to, certainly a lot of people became aware of that. That became a Columbus story and maybe even beyond there, which led to him not being even able to practice law at this particular point. What did you make of that whole thing so soon after you had left the bench?
Well, Jason, I think, did a pretty nice job as a lawyer, to tell you the truth, from what I could see. I was helping both him and Judge Edwards after they got elected, because, like I say, we both get elected at the same time, and neither of them had been, stepped foot basically in the Marion County Courthouse for 20 years. You know, so between election day and when they took office a couple months later, I worked with them both and sort of got them up to speed and stuff. And I think both of them appreciated the help I gave them and stuff. And of course, once I retired, I did get some cases as visiting judge here, including the popcorn lung case. That was a complex case. And it took 2.5 months to get through all the motions on that, because it was my case. I just couldn't do it because of the caseload, but a visiting judge I could and got it done. But anyway, so Judge Warner was doing fine that way and stuff, but then you have the incident that happens, and you know, what is it? You know, were they drinking? You'd have to think probably. And, you know, why were they out there at that location? They were probably trying to avoid the city of Marion, trying to get home. And some bad things happen. And it's like I said, unless you screwed up, you could have that job for life. And I thought Jason was on that track. But unfortunately, he didn't. He made bad decisions. They both made bad decisions.
What do you think was the worst decision made on his behalf during that whole incident?
You mean his worst decision?
Yeah, his worst decision.
Leaving.
When you heard that, what did you think?
What boiled down to, it seems to me, is, I mean, they were both saying that his wife was the driver. You know, if they would have stayed there, Jason wouldn't have been charged with anything. But, you know, the fact he got out and looked in and they went in, that's what got him involved. And, you know, he may have driven home, too. I don't know about that. But, then you're in felony territory.
Well, and I think the judge in that case said something to that effect, that you are a judge, you should have known. Why would you do this?
Oh, panic-stricken.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Because one of the things that can cause you problems as a judge is if you get popped for a DUI or something, or that's why, you know, when I was outside, wouldn't drink. I still don't, for that matter. If I have to drive at all, don't drink at all, you know, because that's one of the things that can cause you problems. But even that, even if he'd been driving and even had been a DUI, it's not necessarily fatal, because there have been a number of judges who got convicted of that and got reelected. You know, he may have well had opposition, which he probably wouldn't have had if he hadn't gotten in this problem. But that was the mistake. He shouldn't have left.
You know, I think one of the biggest questions, he served his time.
Yes.
He went to prison. He served his time. He got out. He, I don't know if he still does, but he did want to practice law. He wanted to go back to that. He had a lot of people from Marion write him letters of recommendation to do so. A lot of people were surprised by a lot of the names on that list. Do you think he should be allowed to practice law?
That's a determination for the Ohio Supreme Court. You know, he can apply for to be readmitted. Depends how he's done. You know, if he's done well and stuff. Yeah, it's entirely possible, because his record was fine otherwise. And, you know, but that's the call of the Supreme Court, whether they want to do that or not.
Would you have recommended it?
Recommended what?
That he have his law license reinstated.
Well, that's another potential thing that could come up in front of court.
Recently, we had the big trial. We talked just a moment before we went on the air about the Ayers Ratliff trial here, which he was found not guilty just a few weeks ago. What was your take on that?
Well, really, I knew very little about it. I've done a lot of visiting judge work, but since Judge Frerichs was appointed, I haven't had any cases in Marion, so I'm sort of out of the loop. All I've gotten from it was, generally speaking, was what I saw in the paper or heard on the radio and stuff, just like anybody else. I mean, I had some discussions with local attorneys on it a little bit, but I didn't know all that much about it, so I'm not the best person to ask about it as far as the particulars.
Well, I guess it just comes down to, you had a city councilman here.
Right.
But this can be anybody. If you are any kind of high-profile person in a community and you're accused of something, even if you're found not guilty in the end, that's with you now. And especially in the internet age, because anybody who Googles your name will get a story regarding that.
Well, it is, but the fact that you're found not guilty counts for a heck of a lot, too. And it depends on the person. Some of them say, well, if you're charged, if there's smoke, there's fire, you probably did something. But a lot of people says, well, if you're found not guilty, that's how it is.
Has the internet changed how judges operate, how courts operate in any way?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, a lot of ways, and a lot of good ways. Research and stuff. You can do it from your home real easy, and that's what I do. My visiting judge stuff I do, a lot of it is from my office at home, and where I can research and just have all the libraries I want from my computer. What an amazing thing. I can dictate my rulings because I'm not real good with the keyboards and stuff. I can just do my voice and drag and speak, you know, puts it down there. I just make some changes. That's amazing. It's just, well, the video arraignments and stuff, so people don't have to travel all that distance. Just great technology as far as that goes. It's changed. The social media thing has certainly affected things as far as, you know, judges have to run for office if you're in contested election. That can be a real, that's a real factor. I've never had a social media presence, because should you really be friends with a judge?
Well, it's hard
that's
to
the
say.
Way I looked at it.
Hard to say. Judge, what has been the best part of your career?
Oh, I guess, there's so many different ways it's been good. Keeps my mind sharp. The cases are interesting. Some of it's repetitive and stuff, but it's not bad. yeah, municipal court's wonderful because you have interaction with so many people, and you can try and do well for everybody that way. Common pleas court, a lot less cases, but a lot more complex cases, and that really exercises your mind and your legal research, and I love doing legal research, trying to find the right answer to the legal issues, and I'm pretty good at it, if I say so myself. And that's a pleasure doing that. It's just you can try and do a lot of good, and you try and do justice, and it's a good thing.
What's the highlight of your life?
Probably living with my wife. She passed away 4.5 years ago, and I miss her. But she was a great lady, and she worked at a lot of places as a speech therapist. Last 20 years was with the city schools, and she was very good at her job. She just loved kids, and she was great with children. And she was a wonderful person, just a wonderful person. I can't believe that I was lucky enough to be married to a person like her.
How do you get through a loss like that?
Well, that's an interesting experience. I had another bad experience. Well, when I was 8 years old, my dad died suddenly. And that was a tremendous blow to me. Probably the biggest blow of my life. And that was a rough time coming back. So I had that experience earlier. This, I'm older, and, you know, she was in her 60s and stuff, which was too early, but still, you know, I've seen people die and such, and so I could handle that a lot better. But I found out that when you're married as long as you are, I think you actually do become so connected with that person's part of you. And when that person is gone, there's just something in the back of your mind. It's just the background. Is everything okay? Everything okay? When the person dies, when your wife dies, it's like, is everything okay? And the answer is no. Where is Sarah? She's not there. And it just keeps running. And it's there. And it just keeps there and just continued on. And you'd wake up a month afterwards and stuff, and you just wake up sad. But as time goes on, the weeks, it fades. It slowly fades. And what was it? Maybe about, she died 2 days after Christmas. And it was probably about the first week of March. I started to realize that's almost gone. And then you're ready to go on with your life.
Do you have a philosophy that you live by?
Yeah. Basically, to do right and do good. Help people. Live as good a life as I can.
Judge, we've got 1 minute left. How do you hope people look back? You're not going anywhere, but how do you look? People look back on your life? And look back on your time of service here in Marion.
Well, I hope well. I hope they do. I've tried to do the best I could, and tried to follow the rules as best I could, and I think I did a decent job. Yeah.
And I nobody more liked, and nobody this community looked up to more. And you're going to come back and do another interview with me. This is not going to be the last one, because we can't wait 10 years between these things.
Yeah. Well, get me when you can.
I will. Judge, it's always wonderful to see you, and it's always wonderful to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Judge William Finnegan, certainly one of the well-known names in Marion history, and continues on keeping on these days. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Marion Waldo Road, telephone number 740-225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com.
If you're talking